being in this life as a stranger, you know, when you're a stranger in an area, you don't feel attached to this area. You know, you are, according to the definition here, we are all strangers. What they call ajams. We're all strangers here. You cannot live here in the sense of buy a home. Do what you want to do. Make this your home. You cannot make this your home. You're a stranger. So there's a lot of things you won't do here that you will do back home. You won't buy a lot of stuff that you know you'll have to leave behind here. When you're home, you'll buy up all kinds of things because this is home. You buy it and you keep it here. But here you won't do this. You'll try to live with a minimum. You don't want to spend too much money here because it's not home. You're a stranger. That same way, really, you should look at this life. This is not the home. Home is the next life. This one here is a short period that we're here, and we can't take anything with us from this life except our deeds. So this is how we should treat this life, as a stranger. You only take what is necessary. Just as when you're working here, you only buy what is necessary. You buy all the things here, what is necessary. You need to live, you must have some stove, refrigerator, basics too. So you get this much. Similarly, in terms of this life, you concentrate on the things which are necessary, which you will take with you, which are useful to you, ultimately. Good deeds. Or like a traveler, Prophet ﷺ said, be like a traveler. Traveler meaning one who passes through a land, he's not attached to it. He passes through, he stops off enough to do what he has to do, and he keeps going. So he's not tied, he doesn't feel, you know, a part of this thing in the full sense. Similarly, this is the way that we have to look at this life. For us to be better Muslims. All we're talking about here is, the title of this presentation is How to Be a Better Muslim. Now Prophet Muhammad SAW, he gave us certain things. See what happens, as I said before, people, everybody ultimately wants to be a better Muslim, in the sense that better Muslim means one who's guaranteed paradise. And you have a lot of people who are going to come and offer you a shortcut to be a better Muslim, to get paradise. However, these shortcuts, you know, whether it is some amulets or some special zikr that you say in the morning or the evening, or you do this and do that, you know, a variety of little things that you do, and when you do this, guaranteeing you paradise, this is Satan. Satan taking you away from the true path and on to the path of the devils, who end up in hell. This is taking you away. Because the path which will guarantee you to paradise is not an easy path. It is not an easy path. It is a difficult path. It involves struggle. True struggle. Struggle with yourself, with your family, with your community, with your society. You will be in a constant state of struggle. And these are the principles the Prophet ﷺ has outlined for us. See, when we go back to the Sunnah, we go back to what the Prophet ﷺ gave us, it is there. The path, the way is there. There is much which I have presented to you this evening, just a few hadiths of the Prophet ﷺ, a few statements of his. In these few statements, there is so much. If we manage to do a quarter of it, alhamdulillah, for sure we will be better Muslims. For sure we will be on that path. There is much to do. Plenty in the guidance of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam for us. This is why when he used to give a talk, he had a special opening speech he gave, which is called Khutbatul Hajj. And at the end of it, he would say, "Inna afdaq al hadith kitabullah." The most truthful of speech, of sayings, is the Book of Allah. وَإِنَّ خَيْرَ الْهَدِي هَدِي مُحَمَّدٍ. And the best form of guidance is the guidance of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He always used to repeat this. His guidance is the best. So if we want to be better Muslims, we want to guarantee for ourselves paradise, then we have to go back to the guidance that he has given us, the way that he has provided for us. And this is what he was talking about. For us to improve ourselves, we have to treat this life as if we are strangers, travelers, taking from it what we know is necessary, what will remain with us, which we will need for later on. That is righteous deeds. We put our greatest efforts into doing righteous deeds. And we only take from this life the other things which are absolutely necessary for our survival. We try not to accumulate what we do not need. Ibn Omar, the same person who reported this hadith, he said something concerning it, which is reported by those who conveyed this statement of the Prophet Muhammad from him. He said himself, "When you're in the evening, do not wait for the morning. إذا أمسيت فلا تنتظر الصباح." In the evening, you find yourself in the evening, don't wait for the next morning. In other words, putting off things to the next morning for yourself to do. "I'll do it tomorrow morning." Similarly, went on to say, "وإذا أصبحت فلا تنتظر المساء." And in the morning, when you find yourself in the morning, don't wait for the evening. Don't put off until the evening things that come to your mind, good things to do in the morning. Because as I said, this is the way that shaitan, Satan, the devilish forces, cause you to miss out on the opportunities which Allah has given you in your life to serve Him and to come closer to Him. By putting off from the morning to the evening, from the evening to the next morning. He went on to say, وَخُذْ مِنْ صِحَّتِكْ لِسَقَمِكْ. And take from your good health, when you have good health, for the time when you get sick. You try to do as much as you can when you're healthy. So when you get sick and you're unable, you have surplus. And مِنْ حَيَاتِكَ لِمَوْتِكْ. And from your life, for the time of your death. You try to do as much as you can while living so that you will have a surplus which will benefit you when you die and you can no longer do anymore. This was the advice of Ibn Omar. And a final statement, or I mentioned two more statements of the Prophet ﷺ, which have in it lessons for us to improve the quality of our Islam, to become better Muslims. One, he said, concerning the dunya, this life, الدُّنْيَا مَلْعُونَةٌ مَلْعُونٌ مَا فِيهَا إِلَّا ذِكْرُ اللَّهِ وَمَا وَلَّاهُ عَلِمًا وَمُتَعَلِّمًا. The whole of this life is cursed. This world, this existence is cursed. Except the remembrance of Allah and things which assist us to remember Allah. A knowledgeable person and one seeking knowledge. This is it. He's telling us this so that we can take note. The remembrance of Allah in this life is critical, because it is in the remembrance of Allah that we attain righteousness. It's something that we have mentioned a number of times before. This is the essence of righteousness. It comes from the remembrance of Allah. This is why Allah said in the Quran, we establish the prayer, why? To remember Allah. أَقِمِ الصَّلَاةِ لِذِكْرِ. This is the basis of it all, for the remembrance of Allah. Because when we remember Allah, then we submit to Him. We submit our wills to His will. We obey Him. When we forget Him, then we disobey Him. So, everything in this world is cursed except the remembrance of Allah. Things which we do which involve the remembrance of Allah, things which help us to remember Allah. This is why Prophet ﷺ said, you should choose your companions well. You will be raised on the day of judgment with your companions. You choose somebody who reminds you of Allah. When you're with this person, they remind you of Allah. If you start to talk nonsense, they remind you, listen, don't talk nonsense. This is not pleasing to Allah. This is the type of people you want to have around you. So, everything is cursed except the remembrance of Allah and things which help us, people which help us, places which help us to remember Allah. A knowledgeable person, that is, that we seek the company of knowledgeable people, or that we become knowledgeable people, or we are in that process. We are seeking knowledge. We don't feel that we know enough. We know what all we need to know. No. We need to learn more. We need to be with people, either in the form of lectures or in the form of books, because being with that scholar is reading a book of a scholar also. Being in that person's presence is learning, being in that process of learning. We should be reading books of hadith, books which explain for us how to practice the various practices that we are required to practice. The Quran, fundamentally, most important, we should be in that process of learning. And the last hadith which the Prophet mentioned in this regard, which I am mentioning to you, and it's not the last hadith which he has mentioned, there are many other hadiths. Again concerning the dunya, a man came to him and he said to him, could you show me a deed which when I do it, Allah will love me, it will cause Allah to love me and cause the people to love me? You know, this is ideal for us to do something which causes Allah to love us and to cause people to love us. It's a good state. Prophet ﷺ said to him, اذهب في الدنيا يحبك الله. Restrain yourself in this world and Allah will love you. Control yourself. Don't be excessive. Give up some of the things which are halal to you, but you really don't need it. Give it up and Allah will love you. وَذْهَدْ فِي مَا عِنْدَ النَّاسِ يُحِبُّكَ النَّاسِ. And restrain yourself concerning the things belonging to people and they will love you. That is, there are things which people have which you may have the opportunity to take from, which will be halal to you. We're not talking about haram now. Because of course, haram, this is of course, you know, going into a whole other category. We're talking about within the halal. There are things which are halal to you. which belong to people. But if you restrain yourself, hold back from taking these things, people will love you. Part of the message of the Prophet ﷺ for improving ourselves. We become better Muslims when we restrain ourselves in the various things that we have to do in this life, in this world. We don't make this world our goal. Put all of our efforts into gathering as much of this world as we can. When we take what we need and we utilize the rest of our energies to please Allah, Allah will love us. Similarly, when we're dealing with people, this will help to make our lives pleasant. People who may not appreciate that we have taken a particular path, which is one pleasing to Allah, where we do a lot of voluntary acts to try to avoid talking nonsense, being in the presence where people are, you know, expressing nonsense, or, you know, watching things which are haram, etc., etc. We try to remove ourselves from these things. We said that when we do this, of course, a lot of people are not going to like us. We're going to be looked at as like outcasts, people who don't want to be, we're no longer fun people. You know, we're no fun to be with. You know. At the same time, though we may be like that, if when we deal with people, we deal with them in this restrained manner, in this restrained manner, when we restrain ourselves from taking of the things which people have, which are halal to us, but we don't take it, we let them keep it, they will love us. So, in spite of the difficulty of our situation, we can improve it by self-restraint in dealing with people's properties and wealth, etc. So in summing up, we said that to be a better Muslim, one must first be a good Muslim. That is, we have to establish the foundation of Islam in our lives. That which is compulsory, we have to deal with without any kind of resistance. We have to make it a full-time commitment that we are going to do what Allah has commanded us to do. When we have established that, we can now begin the path of approaching Allah, coming closer to Allah, to become among the beloved of Allah. We do that by voluntary acts, done for Allah directly, or voluntarily giving up certain things that we may take of this life, limiting ourselves to the things which are particularly beneficial for us in the next life, and taking from this life only what is necessary for our basic survival. This way, we can earn the love of Allah, we can come closer to Allah. We make use of our health, we make use of our spare time. We don't take vacations from Allah. There is no vacation from the remembrance of Allah, from serving Allah. No vacations. No matter what. We as men may say, well, in the case of women, you know, after childbirth, they got 40 days vacation. But no, it may be they're not required to make salah. That doesn't mean that they take a vacation from remembering Allah, no. They still have to remember Allah in the other things that they do during the day, when they get up in the morning, you know, remembering Allah, going to bed at night, remembering Allah, you know, saying Bismillah before doing this and doing that. They still have to remember Allah throughout the day. Actually, it's not really a vacation at all. There is no vacation. So we don't have spare time that we waste. We utilize our spare time to serve Allah voluntarily. We utilize our good health to do as much of the voluntary acts as we can before we reach a time when we can't, either by dying or becoming too old or too weak to do the things that we want to do. Similarly, we realize that we are not free to do whatever we wish in this life, because that is the path to hell. And we really cannot do whatever we wish in this life anyway. Only what Allah will allow us to. However, in the next life in paradise, we will be able to. So we trade the right to do whatever we wish in this life for doing it completely in the next life, according to the will of Allah. And we also realize that the vast majority of things that we may find unpleasant, difficult, these are the things that we have to put our utmost effort in doing, because they are the things which will carry us to paradise. And in closing, we have to remember that whether we consider ourselves to be a stranger in this life or not, we are strangers. Prophet ﷺ advised us to be as a stranger. We are strangers in that the period of time that we spend here is short, and when we die, we cannot take the majority of what we have accumulated with us. We can't take it. Just as if they gave you an exit visa tomorrow, you got to leave the country, there's only so much that you can take with you. Same way, when the angel of death comes, the only thing you can take with you are your deeds. So you are a stranger, whether you realize it or not. It is for you to realize it. And if you do, then you can become a better Muslim who would then be beloved to Allah and would then, inshallah, attain paradise in the next life and would be blessed in whatever we do in this life. As the Prophet ﷺ said, the life of the true believer, the one who is close to Allah, is a very strange and amazing thing. It's all good. And this is only the case of the believer. When a calamity befalls him, he is patient, and Allah rewards him for it. And when good comes to him, he is thankful to Allah, and Allah also rewards him for it. I will stop here, inshallah, and allow you all to ask any questions you'd like to ask, you know, concerning the topic, being a better Muslim. Actually, if I were to go on to the section that I mentioned on the bid'ahs, you know, then it would not give you an opportunity to ask questions. So what I'll do is just save these bid'ahs to the next session, or if people have asked whatever questions they wanted to ask and there is still a reasonable amount of time, then I can briefly mention just examples of certain bid'ah in the various practices, you know, of the various acts that we are required to do as Muslims. Everybody is satisfied with what it means to be a better Muslim.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah. according to this project, you want to be a better Muslim. And finally, I want to ask you about the state of science. We must to prejudge the science. It means what we are doing is for Allah. What Allah wants. But now, because of life, example, we come here for work, we must to spend we must spend a life, maybe 9 hours in one day. Now we still remain about 16 hours. But we know, you know, in work, we do some job. And after job, after work, we must rest. We must do everything. And now there is how to make the remaining hours utilized for Allah. I think is you can only do small and less hours for Allah. And now if you do this condition too long time, I think we cannot utilize the time. And now how this concept can you do in our life? Because we come to the world not before. Before you cannot only do the thing for Allah, but you can do the life. I just contrary what the concept. How to make an understanding? I can have the explanation for it.
Okay. See, as I said, you know, Islam covers all aspects of our lives, which includes work. So, if we are working, there are a variety of principles which Allah has provided for us through the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam for dealing with work in such a way that it is pleasing to Allah. See, if we come to work and we think of work as being separate, you know, we have the other part of our life which we can try to find time to deal with Allah, but then during work time, it's like we are now become slaves to the dunya. See, this is a mistake on our part. Because this period of time when we're working, this should not really be any different from the period of time when we're not working. It is all one. There is guidance from Islam for the time when we're working, as for the time when we're not working. So it means from the time that you start the job, in the morning, whatever your job is, there are things which Allah requires of you. That you try to remember these things, you try to do your work in accordance with the law of Allah. By doing that, you are utilizing your time for the pleasure of Allah. See, you are dealing with your basic needs because you're here in this life. Some things you have to provide. But at the same time, you're not letting that become so important that you now forget Allah. But you do it according to how Allah wants you to do it. So you're honest in your dealings. There are opportunities for you to steal things, you know, to cut corners, you know, to cheat, to lie, all these different opportunities are there. You know, working in a hotel. You know, you may be dealing with corrupt people. These corrupt people may have some things that are very attractive. You know, how do you deal? You know, this is your work. Now, you are tested. Now you are tested. Will you obey Allah? You know this person is a corrupt person. What do you do? You advise the person to become good. And if the person is displeased and doesn't, you know, despises you, then you avoid them. So in your work, in the course of your work, you're pleasing Allah. You're commanding the good, you're prohibiting the evil. You're avoiding the evil, you're seeking the good. So, it is a 24-hour affair. These things you will be doing, some of them will be compulsory things, some of them will be voluntary things. You understand? You're doing a job, you're told to do a particular job. This job requires you, you know, to do a specific thing. However, there are other things that you can do, which you may not get money for, but it is part of doing your job well. You understand? I mean, you can do a job which is the bare minimum. If nobody can say you didn't do your job, but then they're doing your job well. You know, and the Prophet has said, in Allah, يُحِبُّ مِنْ أَحَدِكُمْ إِذَا عَمِلَ عَمَلًا مِنْ يُتْقِنَ. And Allah loves from each of you that when you do something, you do it well, as best as you can. So by doing that again, you're pleasing Allah. There's no reward. See, some people looking at it in terms of reward. If I do this extra, they're not going to pay me anymore. My salary is not going to increase. You know? Or if a person decides to do extra, he's doing it, I'm going to do this extra so that the my advisor, my supervisor will see that I'm a hard worker, so he'll give me a better job. He's not doing it for Allah. Both places the person's missed out. Right? It is beneficial to him when it is a voluntary act for the pleasure of Allah to fulfill what Allah requires of him. It may also earn him that extra. But he's not concerned primarily, he's not doing it primarily for that extra. He's doing it for the pleasure of Allah. So, I'm sure, you know, and I'm just talking in a general sense. If I knew exactly what your job is and you outlined exactly what you did, we could find thousands of different ways that we could, you could please Allah in your 9 hours of work. By doing compulsory acts, as well as by doing voluntary acts.
Learned speaker, as you rightly mentioned, we are strangers in this Islamic country. We have come here to work, to earn some money for the well-being of our family. In the process of our duties, if you take on a Friday, while working, our superiors, they don't allow us or anyone to go for the Imam prayer. In a situation like that, if the employee disobeys the supervisor, he will lose his job. At the same time, if he disobeys Allah, he will get the reputation of Allah. In a circumstance like that, what can the individual do? What action can he take?
Well, there are different actions which can be taken here in this life. And there are other actions which can be taken, you know, for the next life. In terms of this situation here, we know that the laws of the country do or are supposed to provide for the basic needs of Muslims. So there may be, and I'm sure there are some individuals here who, if they were aware of this prohibition which exists, where people are prevented from making their, that they would intervene and cause this situation to change. So it requires, it means that one, people may seek such individuals, try to find such influential individuals who can cause the situation here to change. That's one approach. Another approach may be for people as a whole. It may be, you see, if one person decides to go to Juma, that one person can be fired and there's no big problem. But if all the people go to Juma, then likely they cannot fire the whole staff one time and you know, because the whole functioning of the place will not take place if everybody walks off. So it may require group action. That's another approach. The third approach, what one has to do is look into the situation personally, you as an individual. Is your work here absolutely necessary? You see, if you cannot find work at home, there is no work available for you. Your family, if you do not work here and send this money back home, they will starve. They will be out on the street. They will have no place to live. So it's a matter of survival. I mean, purely, truly, I don't mean in the philosophical sense, because what happens sometimes, people get up in the philosophical sense of survival, you know, survival meaning having a nice house with a lot of nice things and an extra car and all these other things. I'm not talking about basic survival now. Okay. So, if a person is in a situation where for basic survival they have to do this job, then of course Allah is most merciful. Most merciful. The person feels repentant, they feel bad about the situation, but they're only doing it as long as it is necessary. Once it no longer becomes necessary, then they have to quit. And if they're in a position where this in fact is not necessary, they can find other jobs, maybe not as well paying, but other jobs are available. They have certain skills which are marketable. They can get money without having to compromise their duty to Allah. Then it becomes compulsory for them to give up the job and find another job wherein they do not disobey Allah. Because for sure, to disobey or to displease Allah in order to please our families, our friends or whatever, is misguided. This is what we spoke about in terms of hell being veiled by our desires. This is our desires. We desire to please our family. We desire to live a pleasurable life. To live a comfortable, pleasurable life. And if we give rein to this desire, you see, at the expense of our duty to Allah, then we have destroyed our life in the sight of Allah. So we have to analyze. We try to do what we can as individual, as a group. We have to look at our own personal situation and judge and be sure. Be certain. And the thing again, see, because what happens is that people think, if I give up this job, what am I going to do? Who is going to provide for me? For my family, you see, all these. But what happens is that the person is not taking the step trusting in Allah. Not believing that if they do make a sacrifice to please Allah, that Allah will help them. So they're afraid. They're more afraid of the dunya and what will happen to them in the dunya than what will happen when they displease Allah. See, this is part of it. Big part of it. People do not have trust in Allah as they should. And of course, this trust is not a blind trust. You know, Islam is not saying we just cast everything away and say, you know, Allah will take care of me. No. You know, you have to strive. But you know that, you see, when you sacrifice and you strive, Allah will support you. He will help. But there is a way. Because Allah does not burden any of us in this life in a way which is too great for us to handle. With every difficulty will come ease. He's promised that. Either we believe He is Allah, He is the one who has created the universe and all that is happening is according to His destiny. Either we believe that or we don't. If we believe it, it means, as He promised, if we have the difficulty, it's going to come in. It means that if we make a sacrifice, we may find ourselves in a period of difficulty, but a period of ease will come in which our life will improve or take a better path or be bearable.
To please Allah, the obligatory prayer or the obligatory rules we follow. But taking practical example, doing this obligatory way of Islamic life is more easy in this part of the spring. Back home in Sri Lanka or India, where we live in, other communities and our working environment, our day-to-day life doesn't permit in such a way to do our even our obligated prayers in time. For example, maybe the first class, maybe sometimes the last class. So, a Muslim is put into a very conditions like what our brother mentioned, that Juma prayer is here. So in this way, how he can overcome or develop that?
Well, let's look at what you're saying, brother. If you're saying that Muslims in India or Sri Lanka are not able to practice the basic pillars of Islam, then you're in fact saying that Islam is not suitable for every place. Isn't it? That's the end, that's the obvious meaning. That's the other side of what you're saying. Maybe you're not actually saying those in words, but this is what it implies. When in fact we know that Islam is suitable for anywhere. Obligatory prayers are obligatory in their times as long as you are conscious. There is no excuse unless you lose your consciousness or unless you are a traveler, you have allowance for shortening and joining. And even within your circumstances, the Prophet ﷺ did join prayers of Zuhr and Asr, Maghrib and Isha, in Medina, not traveling, not being sick, and not without any, you know, special condition. And he said that he did this to remove from us any difficulty. So, if you cannot, or the circumstance occurs where you cannot pray Asr in time, then you are allowed to pray Asr along with Zuhr. Or if you have difficulty in praying the Maghrib at its time, you are allowed to pray Maghrib along with Isha. But this is something you know ahead of time, and you set that intention for. And it should not be something that becomes your daily pattern. You know, your life, that's it. Now you're just making, you're only praying three times a day. Right? This is something else. We're talking about circumstances which will arise from time to time. And in those circumstances, you're allowed to join it. This is in Sahih Muslim. Prophet Muhammad ﷺ did this. And the prayer itself can be done standing, or it can be done sitting. It can be finished in a few minutes. And no matter what work situation you find, you will have an opportunity to make the prayer if you want to make it. You see? Sometimes people will not pray because they don't want the non-Muslims to see them pray. And so they won't pray. It's not that they can't pray, but they won't because they don't want them to see them. You see? Now people may do this. There may be a variety of different reasons why people will not pray in the correct time. But if a person wants to pray, they fear Allah, there will be a way. For sure. There will be.
When you know for certain that you cannot perform other prayers, and as you mentioned, you said you can better combine with your circumstances, what means the day practically. Well, does it mean that you can pray in the place of work itself without going to a masjid?
It's possible. I mean, going to the masjid is preferable, but it is not compulsory.